Welcome to the Phil Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 4:53 p.m. and that is Central Time. And today is August 14th. And I thought we'd kick off today with the High Yield Bond Index. It's the total return index on Chinese debt, and it's clearly trending downwards. We had a massive break of the trend back in 2021, and then we had a good sized rebound at the end of 2022, as some enthusiasm around the end of the lockdowns for COVID spread through the market. But since then, it's done nothing but reverse it. So this is very clearly a very big downtrend, and it's really only a question of whether this is rescuable or is it representative of a new secular decline. More than half of all high yield debt in China is property related. So obviously this is having a major impact on the economy. But then we also have to consider that when we think about emerging market debt, well, then China also represents a significant proportion of that. And when we look at the total of emerging market debt in the corporate sector, then property developers in China represent a big portion of that as well. And that obviously then represents contagion potential. But of course, it's not simply that property developers are under pressure. When you think about all of the bullish prognostications we've had around the impending demand cliff, or I guess it's really a mountain that had to be overcome, that there was going to be this enormous amount of demand for resources from the renewable energy zero carbon emissions lobby, and that we were going to have a doubling in demand for copper. Well, that's potentially true. But none of those forecasts pay any attention to the sustainability of Chinese demand. So copper was in negative territory today, not in a dynamic manner, but certainly not rebounding from the lows put in last week either. And we're right in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Then, if we spread it out a little and look at the LME Metals Index, well, it is also trending downwards. We have this huge reaction against the accelerated advance from the peak back in early 2022. It is trading below the 1,000-day moving average and has encountered resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average on two separate occasions over the last quarter. So there's clearly the potential here that we're going to see some additional downside. So that is certainly something that a country like Australia is going to be paying attention to. And the ASX 200 continues to range here below the 7,500 point level. Course, that's in nominal terms. And when we look at the Australian dollar, it's certainly not trending higher. In fact, it was at a new reaction low in here today. So a little oversold in the short term. And considering how choppy this trend has been, it wouldn't be that surprising to see a little bit of pause and consolidation here. But then let's just think about the ASX and look at that in US dollar terms from the perspective of an international investor. And when we start to incorporate that currency differential, well, then we have some spiky action, but there's a downward bias that's been in play now for 2 years. So commodity weakness is certainly a feature of the weakness within the Chinese property sector. But then, of course, you also have the fact that the renminbi remains weak. Now we're right in the region of the lows. So this is about where the central bank is likely to intervene if they're of a mind to. So it's certainly something to pay attention to. And when we think about the stock market, well, it was down about 2% in very early trading on Sunday night, but or Sunday night my time, but then recouped a good part of the initial loss by the end of the day and finished down about 1%. And it was a pretty similar story for Hong Kong, which was also down about 1%. So then, of course, the 10-year government bond yield continues to compress, and this looks completely different from government bonds just about everywhere else. So China is dealing with the very real potential that deflationary forces are going to remain in play. But then, of course, there's also this issue about a flight to quality. When you have the high yield sector trending down in such a profound manner, then it's bound to put downward pressure on the 10-year yield. If people are flooding out of property investments, flooding out of the higher yielding portion of the bond market, then that's going to create demand for government bonds. And we could easily see the Chinese 10-year continuing to compress. And of course, that's only going to further emphasize the argument that the best performing bond markets have been sovereign markets within the Asian emerging markets, and that the best performing stock markets have been the US tech sector. Now, let's also just continue to keep an eye on India. And the Nifty index was well off its lows in here today. There's been a consolidation underway for the last month. It's at least unwinding its overbought condition. Now I'm going to put that back into local currency terms so we can see that it has broken out in local currency terms and is right in the region of the lower side of that little range. Of course, we've had quite a bit of rupee weakness over the last couple of weeks, but the rupee did begin to steady today in the region of the lows from back in October. So the dollar is right at the upper side of its range. Now, considering the tendency of the rupee to devalue, then we're going to see, we're definitely going to have to see more than just one day on the upside for the rupee in order to confirm that demand has been found here. So I think it is also important to pay attention to the banking sector because banks have historically been a lead indicator for the Indian market, and they have remained weak, so unwinding the overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average. Then we had a really impressive rebound in some of those European banks last week, and in here today, the European banking or the Eurozone banking sector was also in positive territory, so started to follow through on the upside. Then I think it's also relevant to highlight that the regional banks in the USA are starting to roll over. So they've got right up to test the region of the 200-day moving average and are now starting to unwind that short-term overbought condition. Of course, this also begs the question, how high can interest rates go before we are going to see some deleterious effects? And of course, that is also there's a lot of questioning going on right now about Milton Friedman's contention that there's a long and variable lag and that people are impatient. And obviously, that's easily explained by the strength that we've had in the stock market. When you go a year after the beginning of a tightening cycle and interest rates have gone up so quickly, and there hasn't been any real substantive evidence of chronic weakness in the stock market, well, then it is, I think, reasonable to begin to rationalize and say, well, golly, maybe there really is going to be a soft landing. But the reality here is that the 10-year yield is still rising. And this is obviously then beginning to raise important questions. There's a growing consensus in the bond markets that inflation is not going to come down below 3%, and that we are heading for a permanently higher plateau. So that's one reason to think that interest rates should stay higher for longer. But then, of course, there is the reason why we've had upward pressure on yields anyway. Over the last couple of weeks, there's been a huge amount of issuance. So that's putting upward pressure because there's simply not as much demand. But it has broken up through the 4% level and it is establishing itself above that. So having found support in the region of the 200-day moving average and the upper side of the underlying range, there is still the potential here that we're going to see some additional upside. Now, I remain very much of the view that we are going to see more deflationary forces before too long. But I think it is worth just considering that when the Federal Reserve took money off the balance sheet back in 2017 through 19, That was about 750 billion, and it totaled about 15.7% of the size of the peak level of the balance sheet. Well, it's also now taken about 750 billion off the total, but because we're coming from such an incredibly high level, then it really only equates with about 8.5% of the total. So the extent of tightening isn't nearly as much on this occasion as it was back then. It is happening faster, but it's coming from a much higher level. And I think that's also really quite clear when we look at the year-over-year change in money flow. And it's been really quite amazing that this is the first time ever it's actually gone down, but it is beginning to moderate here. Then when we look at just the absolute value, well, it did come down a little, but not really a lot. And relative to the size of the move that we had during 2020, where basically the money supply went from about 15 trillion and change to 21 trillion in the space of about 18 months. So yes, the pace of the acceleration has ebbed, but it's not coming down very fast. So the knock-on effect for the wider market hasn't been nearly as great. Now, of course, we do have a wild card when we think about inflationary pressures, and that is the oil price. And oil has broken the medium-term downtrend. Now, the price was in mildly negative territory today, but it was well off the lows, and the sequence of higher reaction lows remains intact. So there's the clear potential that we're going to continue to see additional upside, at least until there's clear evidence that deflationary forces have, in fact, begun to be observed. So then let's look at some of these stock market indices. The NASDAQ 100 was in positive territory. So that is holding out the prospect that perhaps we're going to see a mild consolidation, and that it is holding the 15,000 level. Now, there's still a downward bias, so upside follow-through will be required in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But bond yields continuing to rise, well, that is eventually going to take a toll. But I don't think investors are going to be all that worried until we start to see high yield spreads rising. And they're not rising. In fact, they're contracting. And it is right now in the region of the 1,000-day moving average on the lower side of the range. So this is beginning to highlight here that a large part of the corporate sector successfully was able to refinance during the pandemic. So they're not under nearly the same pressure to, or at least they're not under the same refinancing pressure that they would have been in normal circumstances. Now, if we think about, well, when is the wall of refunding, refinancing going to occur? Probably somewhere around 2026. A lot of the debt issued in 2021 would have had a 5-year maturity. So that's one of the mitigating factors. But as long as yields continue to rise, it's going to represent a headwind. If you can get a short-dated bond where you're really investing risk-free, and you're getting a yield of 5.3 or 5.35%, then when you think about the performance of the stock market, well, the Dow Jones is up about 6. So if you were investing in Canada, you got about the same as you did if you were investing in bonds. And where you started to really get rewarded was if you were looking at Brazil, or for example, or Mexico. Then on a currency adjusted basis, you were getting rewarded. If you were investing in just simply currency deposits there, you were getting a much bigger return. So the return on the stock market on a currency adjusted basis is just about the same as one would have got on a 12-month deposit. So the, of course, big performer so far this year has been the NASDAQ. And it is being led higher by these very large companies. Now, they did pull back on a relative basis last week. And there is the potential here that we're looking at a failed upside break, but it did rebound in here today. So there is still evidence here that investors want to believe that the solution to every problem is going to be fulfilled by artificial intelligence. And Nvidia today was up in really quite a dynamic manner, up with an upside key reversal. And then we also have Tesla and beginning to steady here. Now, Tesla is cutting prices in China. And Chinese companies are increasingly exporting electric vehicles and doing so at a very competitive price. So we're certainly seeing a lot of upset in the global automotive sector, and this is clear evidence that China has moved up the value chain. So of course, then I also saw this really bullish piece from the Asia Times over the weekend, talking about the port of Tianjin, which is east of Beijing. And that it is totally automated and it is run with artificial intelligence and 5G, and that basically there are no employees or very few people actually engaged in moving things around, and that a lot of the crane operators now work from a central hub, and that they can control four or five of the cranes in at a time rather than one at a time, and that they can unload a container ship in a matter of hours, whereas in Los Angeles port it takes about 2 days. So obviously those are massive productivity enhancing factors. So there is of course the possibility that with the application of technology, China is not going to be as intensively focused on infrastructure development. They may conclude probably correctly that they have enough of infrastructure, and that what they need to do is to enhance the individual productivity of each of their workers. Now that's terrible news for the commodity complex, but if we start to see disinflation coming out of China and then factoring through into the rest of the global economy, then that is beneficial for the outlook for interest rates and also for the technology sector. They would benefit, the technology sector would benefit from providing those productivity enhancing functions and also from lower interest rates and more abundant credit. So that is by far the most benign possible outcome from China's disinflationary forces. But of course, then we have to also think about what's going to happen with all the debt. And the dollar index is now closing above the 200-day moving average. Now, on each occasion it's done this over the course of 2023, it has failed. And now it's a question whether it's going to fail again in here. And this also, of course, will have an impact on what happens with gold. So gold prices are hovering here around the $1,900 level and the region of the 200-day moving average. So far, this has been a relatively orderly consolidation in the region of the upper side of this 3-year range. It's an ideal area where, if support is going to be found, that it would happen around this level. But I think in order for that to happen, the dollar is also going to have to roll over. The most bullish prognostication, which obviously implies that there will be a soft landing, well, then that also implies that you can have an economic slowdown without any uptick in unemployment, or that margins, corporate margins, aren't going to be compressed at all. And that seems to me, at least, to be a very optimistic outlook. But I think what's happening in China, it does have global ramifications, and it is the most important time now to pay attention to the consistency of trends. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.